killing had no purpose, no reason or rhyme. He was a friend of mine. He was in Dallas town. He was in Dallas town.
Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Denny Sibinski, Bruce Edwards, and Mike Flaherty from The Bad Omens. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is August 17th, 2014, and I'm talking with three members of The Bad Omens, Denny Sibinski, Bruce Edwards, and joining us on the phone from California is Mike Flaherty. Let's start out with your full name, your date of birth, and your hometown, please. Denny, you want to start?
Sure. My name is Dennis Sibinski, Dennis Anthony Sibinski. And I was born on September 19th, 1947. And I hail from Columbia Heights, Minnesota.
Bruce?
I'm Bruce Michael Edwards. January 25th, 1947, in Columbia Heights, Minnesota.
And Mike?
Terry Michael Flaherty, Elk River, Minnesota, 6/19/47.
Okay, and how about your high school and your year of graduation, Denny?
Went to Columbia Heights Senior High, graduated in 1965.
I went to Columbia Heights Senior High, and I graduated in 1965.
And Mike?
Elk River, transferred to Fridley in 1964, graduated in 1965.
Okay, so before The Bad Omens, what are you doing as far as music goes, Denny?
I was going to high school, obviously. Just getting started on learning how to play guitar. I am self-taught, can't read a note, never did, probably never will. But it came to me quite easily, just playing by ear, and so sneaking my father's guitar out once in a while. And eventually ordering my first guitar through a Sears catalog, managed to muster up enough chords and work in a few leads and sing, and got hooked up in a group in a matter of a few months.
Okay, Bruce?
Well, I had keyboard lessons in third grade. In the summer of third grade, I took piano lessons for 3 months, and at the end of the summer, my mother asked if I wanted to continue, and I said no. Because every time I made a mistake, the piano teacher would hit my finger with a pencil. So you fast forward to high school, and I had some friends that started a little band, a little big band, and they needed percussion. So I was up there playing shakers and bongas in an attic with these guys in the big band. And I got the idea later that I wanted to play drums, so I bought a cheap drum set, and I took lessons from the high school drum or band teacher during the summer to be able to actually read drum music. And when I started The Bad Omens, I was the drummer.
And when you refer to a big band, you're referring to the era of the big band music.
Yeah, it was all horns and brass and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was fun. Bongos. That was me. Bongo Bob.
I understand Larry Hotchkiss was in that band?
Right.
What did Larry play?
He played trumpet in that band.
And Mike?
Well, that would have been in Elk River, and I sang in my church choir there. I had just hadn't been in a group. I had just started getting together with some guys in Elk River, Terry Munich on guitar and Roger Cornelius on drums.
Now, I understand in early 1964, the band started to come together. Does that sound like the right start time?
Yes. That's correct. I actually pulled together Larry Hotchkiss and another player from Main Street. I think you know his name. Started playing. I was drums, and we had two guitars. And then a little later, Denny Sibinski came for a tryout.
Denny, what do you recall about the tryout?
I just remember being in Bruce's great big living room with that pool table there and his snippy little dogs biting at our heels. But other than that, a friend of mine, a mutual friend of ours, actually asked me over there for this audition. Even though my knowledge of music at that point was pretty minimal, it was enough to get me started. Bruce was gracious enough to give me a shot.
Who are the first people in the band?
Well, we were rehearsing then with me as the drummer and several guitar players. It was shortly after that your brother Russ came over, right, Denny? And at that point, we discovered that he was now the drummer. Denny, I think, asked if Russ could try the drums out for one song. And I said, sure, that's fine. It is my drum set, but I suppose he could try playing them. So I handed him Russ the drumsticks, and he said, how do you hold them? So I showed him reluctantly how to hold the drumsticks. And so I said, okay, and I sat down on the organ bench. My dad had a Thomas organ, and then they started playing a song. By the end of the song, I discovered that Russ was a better drummer than I was. I think the next song was Louie Louie, and it was three chords. So I said, wait a minute. There was a chord chart in the seat of the organ that I pulled out. I put the chord chart up. I said, go ahead, I'll play along. I turned the organ on, and I started playing the three chords to Louie Louie. And at the end of the song, Denny turned to me and said, that sounds really good, Bruce. It was a console organ, wood, and it had pedals and all that stuff.
So that just happened to be there at your house?
Right. My dad had all kinds of stuff. He had guitars, banjos. He had a player piano with the paper rolls. So I guess I was the keyboard player at that point.
Who's doing the vocals?
I think Larry and Denny were doing it.
Mike, I believe you come in around September 64, is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think I'd only been at Fridley for the first 2 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Bruce this. Bruce, you had a friend in Fridley who knew Mike Flaherty. Who was the friend?
Well, I had a buddy that I was confirmed with, Steve Christensen, and he and I were in the church choir, and we got kicked out of the church choir regularly, but we went back every week, and then we got kicked out again. But Steve knew that I was starting a band, and he said, hey, I know a guy that says he can play bass guitar. And so we said, well, bring him over. So actually, Steve didn't come over with him, but Mike showed up one night for a tryout.
Mike, what do you recall about your audition?
The audition? Well, it was a first band audition, so of course it was something I was probably nervous about. And my audition song was Ain't Got No Home by Clarence Frogman Henry, where I did the low frog parts, the middle parts, and the girl parts. Anyway, kind of an odd song to audition on, but, it seemed like we were all fairly new to our instruments, so it kind of put us on the same page that way, and I just remember getting past that stage and having fun at the audition.
So you auditioned as a bass player and a vocalist as well?
Yes.
Bruce, Danny, what do you recall about Mike's audition?
Can't remember everything about it, but I just know it went pretty well. He had a lot of charisma. He was a good singer. Like he had mentioned, our expertise at our instruments were in its early stages, so none of us were really too critical about each other's playing. But it worked out very well.
Speaking of instruments, Mike, what were you playing as far as bass guitar?
I was playing a K bass and an amplifier. I think it's in the history, but I had not wanted to leave all my friends in Elk River, so I had kind of gone kicking and screaming. So my dad did buy me promised he'd buy me a guitar, and then also bought me an amplifier. So I had only probably had that for 2 weeks before the audition, so I hadn't had a whole lot of time to work out on it, but it was an exciting new thing, so.
Okay, Denny, what were you playing as far as guitar?
I came in with a Sears Silvertone, ordered it through a catalog. It was a dual pickup, pretty big stuff for me. In fact, I think it was $54, big bucks back then. But that was my guitar. And
you earned that at the truck farm, didn't you?
It probably took 10 years worth of wages, from what I can remember. But that was my very first electric.
And what did you use for an amplifier?
I think I ran my stuff through one of Bruce's at first, but then eventually, within less than a year, I think all of us had Sears Silvertone amps, the biggest ones they had at the time.
Okay, so the lineup's down with Larry Hotchkiss on rhythm guitar and vocals, Danny Savinsky, lead guitar and vocals, Bruce Edwards on organ, Mike Flaherty, bass guitar and vocals, and Russ Savinsky on drums. Now, how do you come up with this name, The Bad Omens?
Well, a lot of groups had dark, edgy names, and we were tossing around the Tree Men. It didn't sound too dark and edgy, so Mike Flaherty came to the audition. I think he had a tiki god around his neck, and that reminded me. I said, well, that's kind of a bad omen, so yeah, I think it was something along that line that we said, hey, bad omen, ooh, we're the bad omens.
Mike, I understand that at your audition you wore some kind of a, what did you call it?
Tiki.
Tiki around
tiki his god.
That was to keep the bad omens away.
didn't work.
Okay, so the band starts playing, and where does the band play live? Do you recall your first job, Mike?
Yeah, the first job was at the Fridley Youth Center.
And how did you get the job?
Well, I had been working from the time that I actually got in town with a group of students, and as it ended up, I ended up being the president of the youth center, which one of my duties was to coordinate the music and the events and bring bands in and have teen dances and everything. And so guess who I picked? I think it ended up being kind of our default gig, the Fridley Youth Center, but we also played the Fridley VFW. I remember a couple odd party jobs, but I don't remember them that clearly. But
I do. I remember carrying the Thomas organ down into basements to play.
Was that a heavy piece
yes.
of equipment?
I mean, it took four people, and the toughest ones were on the top end where you have to bend over at an odd angle and carry this thing down stairs. Later on, I got the portable Farfisa organ. It was a lot easier.
Mike, I understand your father, Terry, was active in getting the band off the ground.
He really had the organizational part of it all together. We, you know, did not and at that point and stuff. So, yeah, he had jumped in and offered to do publicity and things for us and printed up flyers of where we were playing and got on the phone and got us jobs. Did a lot of just managing, but, you know, just helping out and everything when we were getting going. So I think that was a tremendous help, getting those flyers and everything out and getting this extra gigs. And I look back at those things and I go, wow, we were really playing a lot when, you know, from that point. So, yeah.
Now, you did some high school dances, too, as well as some VFW gigs?
Yep, we did the usual high school dances and those, you know, working before we actually got into, you know, say the club circuit and things like that when we joined the union and got more into the club circuit and the ballroom circuit.
Tell me the story about the Fridley VFW gigs.
Well, you know, if you just mean the general, initially when we went in there, my dad rented the space. I don't think they were expecting a teen dance. Well, teen dances were new, so they weren't expecting them to do particularly well, I don't think. And when we started filling the place up with teens, and they were good, manageable dances, we were doing quite well just taking the gate and renting the hall and everything. So we did that for a while, and we were successful, and then they approached us, and they wanted to split the gate with us, do 50-50. And I think at that point we said, okay, you know, we'll keep going with it, and it was still being successful enough for both of us. I believe it was at the point where they came back to us with, we want 60 and we're going to give you 40, that we kind of said, well, you know, it's easy to see the writing on the wall here, you know, and at that point we were starting to get plenty of other gigs and were wanting to play not just our area, but, you know, other areas and everything too, so that worked out well.
Danny, what kind of music is the band playing at this time?
We played a lot of everything, but mostly top 40-ish. We did some 50s and 60s. The unique thing about this group, we were virtually unafraid to take on anything vocally. So we experimented with songs that a lot of the local bands probably would not touch. They were more into the steady rock, Chuck Berry-ish kind of stuff, good dance material. But we would wander off that path and get into vocal stuff that most groups probably would not touch.
Can you give me an example?
Oh, we did Mamas and Papas. We did stuff from overseas, like you'll get into soon here with Mike. He had some contacts overseas, and we would eventually get music and play it here long before it even hit the States, as far as the record stores went.
Mike, what was your connection to the British bands?
Well, I think you might be referring to the fact that I had a British pen pal that I'd had from the day when I was living in Elk River, and we would send each other kind of breaking material from me from the States. She was excited to hear the things from the States, and I was excited to hear, I was actually getting Melody Maker magazine and things like that, and I was excited to hear what was happening in Britain at the time, and I was following those kinds of charts. So anyway, she shipped us some great stuff that we actually did incorporate into the group, and one of those pieces was Gloria by them. We got that early on, and there were quite a few other things too. Another piece I remember that I really liked that we played, Denny sang, was Look Through Any Window by the Hollies. She sent me an EP before we'd ever heard anything like that played in the States. So I Put a Spell on You by the Alan Price set. And so we incorporated those into our repertoire.
Do you recall the name of your pen pal, Mike?
Yeah, her name was Gloria.
So you were getting access to British bands before their records were released in the States.
That's correct.
How did the British songs go over with the crowds you played for, considering they had not heard the songs on the radio?
Well, you know, back in the day when you were spoon-fed everything via the radio, I think they went over surprisingly well because it was something new and fresh and kind of an exotic sound, you know, probably a lot like all of us experienced in a larger sense when we first heard the Beatles on the air. You know, it was just something exotic and foreign, and we hadn't heard anything quite like that. So I think it was exciting.
Now, I understand the band recorded a version of Gloria. Who wants to share the story of that?
I can start. I can't remember everything about it, but I do remember going to this radio station in Golden Valley. I believe it was KUXL. And we dragged our equipment up there and recorded this song, Gloria, into the wee hours of the evening.
Did you have a connection at the radio station?
I believe it was a disc jockey that we had somehow met. I can't remember his name. Maybe Mike remembers how this whole thing got rolling. But anyway, we did make a tape. And for some reason, I don't know whether it was due to scheduling, we were all in college, we were busy, we were on the road, and I don't know if we needed to go back and retake a few cuts from this song, or if it was a mixing issue, but we kind of ran out of time, and the next thing we knew, The Shadows of the Night had it out.
So your recording of Gloria is never pressed up as a vinyl record?
I don't believe it was ever finally mixed. And it definitely wasn't pressed.
Bruce, at some point, did you trade in the Thomas for a different type of a organ?
Well, yeah, like most bands, I would go down to B sharp and look at these wonderful lightweight things. And I asked Jimmy Lopez, the owner of B sharp, how much? And he says, well, make me an offer. And I said, well, I don't have a clue. And he says, well, just make me an offer. I said, $100. Just get out of here. I said, well, give me a hint. He says, well, make me another offer. So I said, $200. He says, get out of here. And this went on. I mean, he would never tell me a price. And finally, when I got to the right level, he says, okay, tell you what I'll do. for $50 more, you can have it, but then you got to wear the B sharp sticker on it. So I said, fine.
And I assume the new Farfisa was more lightweight and easier to transport.
Correct. Yeah, it didn't have all the tone quality that the Thomas organ had with the Leslie speaker built in, but it was portable.
Do we know what Russ is playing for drums?
He bought himself a Rogers kit. It had a double bass. And I don't think he used the double bass, but he always had a spare, obviously, because of that. But he had enough toys to go along with it. It was a nice set, and I believe he still has it to this day.
A story has surfaced recently about Bruce having a fondness for munching on cookies during the band jobs. What's the story, Bruce?
Well, life is too short, and you should always have cookies on hand. even when I taught elementary school, I would use cookies as a ploy to get people interested. So, we had cookies, and we did have a Christmas light that spun around and changed colors behind the set. And sometimes I would bring cookies and put them on the Christmas light thing to warm them up. And then at break time, I'd say, you know, there's nothing like a warm cookie. And eventually, some of the girls would start bringing in cookies. And I recall one disc jockey kind of picked up on this cookie theme. And when we played up in St. Cloud, he had a contest over the air to who can bring Bruce the largest cookie. And I forget what the prize was, probably some album or something. But some girls brought in some huge cookie and won the contest.
Now I understand Larry Hotchkiss left the band. What was the time period when Larry left?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I'm thinking it was around the early 1965, probably just before our graduation.
How soon after that did you go into the studio to record your 45?
I guess I'm not exactly confident on when that date was.
Well, it was warm out, so it must have been spring.
So spring of 65, you head into the studio to record a 45. And what was the studio and what were the songs? Mike, you want to chime in?
Sure. Chimes of Freedom, He Was a Friend of Mine, were the songs. And we also recorded Mr. You're a Better Man Than I, which was impressed. And it was at Dove Studios in Bloomington, Minnesota. And I believe the engineer's name was Arv something.
That would be Daryl Arv Arvidson. Mike, do you recall Daryl's opinion of rock and roll music?
Yeah, I think I said he hated rock and roll, which he pretty much did, you know. Arv was from a generation of recording engineers that had, you know, been recording ads and you know, probably big band things and different things, and all of a sudden here comes all these rock groups, and he quite noticeably did not like the music, but he hung in there.
Now, is this a session where you are paying the full cost yourself?
Yes.
And do you recall how much the session cost and the pressing of the records?
Oh.
Danny?
I recollect it was $50 an hour. And that's one of the reasons why we didn't take too many retakes. We tried to nail it first time around.
How many hours were you in the studio, do you recall?
Oh, it's got to be 2 to 3.
How many copies of the record were pressed on the Twin Town label?
500.
Was it 500? Okay, I couldn't remember if it was 500 or 1,000.
Does anybody recall how you had a connection or how you made a connection with the Twin Town label?
I think that was what was offered through the recording studio.
So it was a kind of a package deal?
Yeah, we didn't know where to go, and he said, well, we have access to a label. I think we said, go ahead, use it.
Okay. So who is singing the vocals on the A side? He was a friend of mine.
Danny, it's myself and Danny.
And on the B side?
It's the same. It's myself and Danny.
Now, had you heard these two songs on the radio or on records?
Yes, we'd heard the Birds version of both songs.
Was that on their very first album?
I believe so.
And the third song, which was never
released was the Yardbird song, Mr. You're a Better Man Than I, and who's doing the lead vocals on that?
Denny's doing the lead, and then I'm singing harmony.
Does anybody have a tape of that to this day?
Yes.
That exists. Bruce, you have the tape?
I brought the MP3 along.
So what did you guys think being in a recording studio for the very first time?
Pricey.
It was a lot of fun. A very, very good experience for me.
Were you nervous?
Oh, hell yeah.